This workshop came about through years of my work in really two locations. The last 15 years or so, I've spent working as a school psychologist in various day schools in the tri-state area. And I also have a private practice in Teaneck, New Jersey. And between the two, I've found that there is a common thread to all the work that I do. And that is the concept of good communication. So whether I am working with parents and their teenage children, whether I'm working with couples, or in the school system, working with teachers and parents, what I've found is the key to successful relationships is good communication. And it's really out of that idea that I've developed this workshop today, in which my goal is to really present you with effective strategies for being able to communicate with your children's school and share with them the needs of your children, not only so that you can get them to understand what your children need in the school system, but also to get them to listen. There's really two parts to communication with schools, and those two parts are both crucial to feeling good about the school system. Part one is being able to figure out how do I share the information that's necessary for the school to be able to cater to my child. And secondly is how do I get them to actually respond to me, to understand that in a school full of children, my child is important and I need them to be able to respond. And so what we're going to do today is really look through a number of different strategies and a number of different concepts to keep in mind that have proven in my experience to really increase the chance that they will both hear you and understand you and lastly respond to you. So we're going to flip to our first slide today, which is really about timing. The first step to getting in touch with your school is figuring out when is the most effective time to do that. And if you take a look at the slide, the first point that I give is to start early. Most parents wait until there is a problem to get in touch with the school. The issue with that is really twofold. Number one is that the school learns to relate to you and to your family as only speaking up when there's a problem, rather than a family that likes to be in communication all the time. In any relationship, as I said, whether we're dealing with parents and kids, teachers and students, couples, husbands and wives, we want to establish a communication system where there isn't this inherent nature of the conversation that is always going to be negative, but rather that we're in touch with each other, that we keep an open line of communication. And so key number one is to start early. Make sure that you get in touch with that school or that particular teacher with the needs of your child, and you do it, if not before the school year starts, then as the school year is starting. You get not only the ability for the teacher to learn about you and your child before the onslaught of school, but also, again, the opportunity for the teacher to see that, hey, this is a family that just wants to be in touch. So I always recommend parents to start early, even if it's just establishing a relationship, saying hello, want to introduce myself, and here's my child. The next important piece is the idea of giving a heads up and what I call a head start. You want, in establishing that early communication, to be able to first give these teachers and give the school a heads up. Hey, want you to know my kid is coming into school. Want you to know who my child is. Working in the school system, it's always very interesting. Parents don't always know this, but there's a real debate with educators. Every year, educators and teachers have to decide, do I want to know about the kids who are coming into school before the school year starts? Or do I want to get to know the child first? And once I get to know the child, then I can sort of figure them out on my own and then perhaps use information later. And there's really two sides to the argument, and there's advantages and disadvantages to both. But one of the things that we have found is that in the school system, if the teachers at least have a heads up that something is coming without even knowing the details, they're able to at least prepare themselves. So starting early allows you to give those teachers a heads up to something that's coming into their door. It also gives them a head start. We all know if we're racing, we all know that kids get really upset when someone cheats because they got a head start before the race starts. Well, it's the same thing in schools, except that it actually works to your advantage, and it's not called cheating. To have teachers get a head start, a running start, as the year begins, that these teachers should be able to know, well, if I have a child who's coming in who needs a little more TLC on the early parts of the school year, if I have a child who's gonna need a little bit more organization, a little bit more help figuring out both where they sit, where their stuff goes, and how to organize their work, depending on the grade that the child is in, then the teacher comes in with the ability to already have some ideas in their head. So starting early does these two pieces. It gives them a heads up, right? That there is somebody coming in this door that I should be aware of, right? Which sets your child a little bit further apart from the rest of the group, which is to your child's advantage. And also gives them the head start, that ability to really get things going before even the school year begins. How do we do this? How do we give our teachers a head start? How do we get into communication with them? Right? And really help to get the ball rolling before school starts? Well, there's a number of different ways to do it. And if you look back at our slide, I list three, although the last one we're going to take away. Number one, phone. Teachers today, they love voicemail. Teachers love voicemail because they check in once a day, they can take their messages, and then they can get back to you and be able to address the issues that you have. Most schools, and for anyone out there who's an educator themselves, you know, almost every school has a rule. Teachers, we want you to get back to parents within 24 to 36 hours. That's sort of like a blanket rule. So that you know as a parent that if you leave a message for a teacher, that you're almost guaranteed a response within the next day or so. Phone messages, as well as email, which we'll get to in a moment, have a very special advantage, which is that a teacher has the opportunity to think about your question, to think about your comment, to think about the message that you're giving before they respond to you. Many people are really good, you know, on the ball. They can respond, answer questions immediately without a problem, without thinking about it, and can be right on. But for most people, research has shown, and especially with teachers, they like to be able to stop, consider what it is that you're saying before they respond to you. Leaving a phone message allows them to do that. Email does the same thing. Email has another advantage, which is that teachers can get email all day, all night, wherever they are. Most teachers won't admit that they're checking their email all day and all night, but it means that if they have a moment to check, you know that they're gonna get the message that you're leaving for them. So email also is a great way to send them a heads up, to send a letter, to say, I want you to know about something. I often recommend to my clients to use email because email has another advantage, which is that when you are in an active dialogue with someone, it's often hard to make sure that you are heard, to make sure that your point is getting across to them. Sometimes people cut you off, they'll think they understand what you're saying, and so they'll continue the conversation, and you don't feel like you get a chance to really get out what it is that you want to get across. Email guarantees that the person is going to read your point. So when you put your points down in email, you know that the person reading it is going to read it top to bottom and will hear all of the points that you're trying to make prior to responding. So email has that advantage. We all know, anybody who's been using email in the last 5 to 10 or 15 years knows that email has a disadvantage also. There are no examples of more frequent misunderstandings than through email. And the issue that has come up often with email, to the point where there are people who give special workshops only in how to write emails, is that email is devoid of emotion. And so without tone of voice, without the concept of sarcasm, without humor being able to come through naturally with email, we do run the issue of email sort of creating misunderstandings. And so it is important when you use email, and again, I do think it's a fantastic way to get through to teachers, It's important to be very careful in how you write and what you're putting across, and to remember that teachers don't always understand the tone of voice that's coming through. It's the reason why they've invented all of those smiley faces and, you know, those little icons of different emotions, because it helps us to be able to get that across in a venue that otherwise doesn't allow it. So phone and email are fantastic ways to get through your message, to get through to the teachers, to the school, to the administration, because again, it allows them to hear it, to listen to it, to think about it, and then to respond to you. What I ask you, if you look back at the slide, not to do, and I say this both as someone who has worked in the school system as well as a parent on the other side, is don't catch the teacher as they walk to the car. It doesn't work. The last thing a teacher wants is to feel like they have to come up with an answer, especially when they're done teaching for the day. It's not a good time to get a thoughtful response from a teacher. It's not a good time to get a teacher at their most patient and their highest energy. And so I recommend to parents not to bother teachers when they catch them in the parking lot at the supermarket, not to catch them on their way out to the car at the end of the day, or even in the middle of the day. I work in a school, and when I work with students who will often want to talk to their teachers about an unfair grade or something that they don't understand, or I beg them not to get the teacher between classes. I said, when you are going to your lunch after your period 7 class and you're off to lunch, the teacher is going to teach another class. And if you try to catch them at that moment, it's the same thing as catching a teacher as they're walking to their car. They're in between, they're rushing, they're not focused. And so we want to give teachers and administrators an opportunity to be at their best. And so that's why phone and email works much better than catching them at the moment. All right, so now that we know how to catch them, let's look at our next slide and use and focus on what I believe is probably the single most important component of communication, and that is language. So I don't know how many of you out there have pet kittens at home, cats and kittens, but we all know that cats and kittens are these adorable, fluffy little things. We also know that if you get a cat cornered in the room where there's no escape, next thing you know, it bares its claws, it gets ready to attack. Why? Because even the calmest, most pleasant animal will attack when it feels defenseless. Language has the ability to put people on the defensive, the same way taking a cat and cornering it puts it on the defensive. And so I think it's crucial that we all are very aware of the language that we use when we are talking to our teachers. And we are going to look at some of that in a little bit. But when I give a workshop to teachers and also in how to speak to parents, I do a similar piece to this, which is helping to figure out the type of language that will keep people from being on the defensive. So there are words that you use that come across like you are attacking the teacher. And again, we'll see some of those in a moment. There are words that you can use that will sound like you're criticizing the teacher. And those are things that we have found put them on the defensive. And when somebody is on the defensive, communication is over. That's the key. So again, whether we're talking about husbands and wives, parents and children, or in our case, teachers and parents, if the teacher that you're speaking to feels like you are criticizing them, where they are cornered and have to defend themselves, then the communication is over. They are closed to hearing what it is that you want to say. And so, and once that happens, your whole point in having a conversation with them is over. And so again, in a moment, we're going to see how to use language to your advantage. If you look back at our slide, bullet number 2 talks about using language to empower the school and empower the teachers. We know that nobody likes hearing anything more than a compliment. If you compliment somebody, it makes them feel good about themselves. It's not ego, And it's not selfishness. It is simple human nature. We like being complimented. And one of the ways that we are complimented is when our expertise is valued and sought after. So no matter what realm of business you're in, whether you work out of the home or in the home, when somebody says to you, "I need your advice," it makes you feel good. And it's a wonderful way to empower other people to come and help develop solutions. And so, one of the things that I ask you to do when talking to your teachers is ask for their observations. Everybody knows that the teachers spend hours upon hours upon hours with your children. Whether it is in the younger grades, where your teachers will often spend most of the day with the children, or whether it's in the higher grades where they'll spend a period or two during the day, they see your kids in a number of different situations. Use that observation. Use the time that these teachers spend with your kids to your advantage. And so we kill two birds with one stone. When you ask a teacher for their observation of your child, you are using information that you don't otherwise have access to, and you're also empowering the teacher to be involved. You're saying, "You see them, I value what you have to tell me, please tell me what your observations are." So ask, always ask the teachers for their observations of your child. It helps them feel that you are actually looking to team with them. Second bullet is ask for their help or ask for their ideas. Whether a teacher has been in the classroom for a year, or whether the teacher has been in the classroom for 11 years or 21 or 31 years, teachers have ideas. True, the longer they're in the classroom, they often pick up more realistic, useful, and practical ideas to help your kids. But even teachers who are new to the field have been in school and they've learned themselves and they've learned strategies. And when you ask a teacher for their ideas in helping your child, you once again are accomplishing both sides of this coin. You're asking them for their help. You're showing them that you want their opinion, that what they have to bring to the table is important. And again, in a moment, we'll see where that comes to life. But you're also making use of information that they may have, expertise that they may have that you don't have. So ask for their observations, ask for help or ideas from them, ask your teachers to contribute to the conversation. And in that way, you empower them. There's another very important element to empowerment. Anybody who's a parent, and I imagine that should be most, if not all of you who are listening, as well as anyone who's an educator knows, that if you get buy-in to a plan from the person you're speaking to, there's a much greater chance of them keeping to that plan. So once again, I'll work with students and I'll say to them, "All right, so your paper is late today, right? What are we going to do about it?" So the kid says, "I don't know." If I feed them an answer and say, "Well, I want your paper by, you have two more days to finish your paper," so they may or may not get it in. They didn't get it in on the first deadline. They may not get it in on the second deadline. However, if I say to them, "You need to tell me how you want to fix this problem," then when they generate ideas, those ideas came from them. And so the buy-in becomes much more powerful since the idea came from them. So when you empower teachers, it works the same way. It also works when you empower your spouse. If you get them to develop the idea, to come up with the idea, to create the idea and the plan and the strategy, then their part of carrying out that plan has a much greater chance of success. And I always recommend that you start with a thank you. Even as you'll see on the slide, if you're not so inclined to say thank you, if they haven't done something that you've been asking them. Because when we say thank you again, we show them that they're appreciated. Even if a teacher hasn't come through for you, and a teacher hasn't been successful, and we're talking clearly the difference, right? I began talking today from before the school year starts. But even later in the year, if you feel like the teacher hasn't really followed through with what you need, if you thank them for trying, if you thank them for being in touch with you, for following up with the conversation, again, it shows that you're teaming together, and that is crucial to being able to come up with a solution in the best interest of your children. So we're going to keep in mind two things as we look at the next couple of slides. The language that we use What are the words we're using? How are we coming across? Are we coming across critical and angry, in which case we could turn those teachers into a cornered cat? Or are we coming across appreciative and in a teamwork type of way that will help us join together in order to get what our child needs? What I have on the next slide are, or the next couple of slides, are two approaches to the very same letter. And I'd like you to look at the first one. Let's read the first one together. Dear Miss So-and-so, this is your child's teacher. Jonathan came home today and told me you kicked him out of class again. While I understand he's a trying kid, this just can't continue. Every time he's kicked out of class, he misses instruction and falls further behind. I would really like it if you could find other ways to reprimand him that do not include sending him out of class. I see it as totally counterproductive and only gives him what he wants, which is to be excused from class. On the surface, there's nothing wrong with this letter. It's a fairly firm and straightforward letter. It gets the point across. You need to find another way to deal with my child. I'd like to now flip to the next letter. And then you'll start to see what I'm talking about when I talk about language and using language to your advantage. Same idea, different approach. Dear Miss X, Jonathan came home today and told me he was asked to leave class again. I know he can be a trying kid, and I really do appreciate that you're still working with him. Notice the bold. It's there for a reason. I am concerned, however, that each time he is asked to leave, he misses the important information you are teaching and falls only further behind, which I believe is part of what motivates his behavior. I know you have many students and that his interruptions only complicate your classroom, but I'm hoping that together we can come up with a more effective consequence for Jonathan when he acts out. If you would like, Jonathan's father and I would be happy to make time to meet with you to discuss what you would like us to do to help, and perhaps to share some things that we have seen Jonathan respond to in the past. We look forward to speaking soon. Now, on the next slide, I've got both letters up at the same time. And I think that the differences are exactly what I'm trying to get at here. In the first letter, Jonathan came home today and told me you kicked him out of class today. We've changed to he told me he was asked to leave class again. You kicked him out of class. It turns the language into the teacher did something versus he was asked to leave. He did something that made him have to go out of class. There's a subtle difference in the way that blame is implied in those two sentences. I really do appreciate that you're still working with him. Okay? That's the thank you that I talked about. Now, between you and me, right? She doesn't have a choice. She has to work with him. That's what her job is. But when you say thank you, when you show appreciation, that changes the tone, and it's a great way to start to make the teacher feel genuinely appreciated. It keeps the teacher open to the rest of the letter. I am concerned, says you, right, that each time he's asked to leave, he misses important information. Important information. So now what you're implying is that what the teacher teaches is valuable. The second version of this letter is full of opportunities to show the teacher that you value them. I know you have many students and that this interruption only complicates your classroom. I'll give you a little hint in case you've never heard it before. Most teachers are going to feel like they have a class full of kids, and to juggle all of those kids is a challenge, and they're right. It is a challenge. And in today's day where we really try to cater education to the best that we can to each individual learning style, it's not like 40 and 50 and 70 years ago where kids were assumed to be in a certain mold. Educators and teachers work very hard to individualize education to each kid's different learning styles. That being said, you have a right to ask that your child be paid attention to in the spectrum of an entire class of kids. So what you're doing here with this sentence, I know you have many students and that his interruption only complicates your classroom, what you're demonstrating to these teachers is that you do appreciate where they're coming from. You do get the fact that they're really on an uphill battle here, but you still have your needs. Together we can come up with a more effective consequence. Now you've joined them. You as a parent are willing to join, and in fact, You do make it even more explicit. Please discuss what you would like us to do to help. We're going to do our part, according to this letter. We're willing to partner with you. And then perhaps we can share some things that we've seen Jonathan respond to, which means we're also going to tell you what we need you to do. So what letter number two does is a number of different things compared to letter number one. Letter number one is a little bit more blaming. It does not put any of the onus on you as parents to try to help. It essentially implied, or rather quite explicitly says, we need you to figure out an answer to this problem. And in letter number two, you're coming right out and saying, I appreciate the work that you do, but we need to work together on this. And together means that we each have things that we will do. And if you can do that and get that across that letter, a teacher is much more open to hearing. One of my rules when I talk to people, when I talk to my patients, or when I give workshops like this, is that I never say I'm going to give you the exact words to say, because the truth is we all speak differently. We all have different language that feels more natural to us. I could say it this way, and you'll say those words would never come out of my mouth. My goal in presenting these letters is not to give you the words that you must write. It's to get across the concepts that I'm asking you to pay attention to in your communication. So however you decide to communicate with your parents, with your child's teachers, however you decide to go ahead and do that, and whether it's by phone or whether it's in person or whether it's by email, the goal is to create a letter or create a communication that is appreciative, that indicates partnership, that does not blame. And if you can do that, you end up with a teacher who is much more open to hearing what it is that you have to say. So what have we got so far? We've got the idea of starting early with your kids and with their teachers. Getting in touch with the school before or as the school is starting, because what that does is it sets up a communication with the school that is before the school year begins and it gets crazy. And also, it sets up the precedent that we can talk just to talk, not only when I have a problem. Giving that head start and that heads up. And then whether you decide to do it by phone or by email, there are these number of different ways that you can get in touch with them. But remember, catching them in the spur of the moment while you guys are picking out hamburger meat for your Sunday barbecue is not going to get you the best response. Get in touch with them at the appropriate time, and they'll be much better in their response to you. And then the concept of language. Don't put them on the defensive. Okay? If we move on, there is another very important piece to communicating with the school. And that's figuring out, who do you communicate with? Great, I've finished this workshop. I now know when to get in touch, how to get in touch, what to say when I want to get in touch. But who do I get in touch with? Who do I talk to? Some schools have a very rigid structure, and it's in the parent handbook. Some are less so. But regardless of what the school wants, there is certain logic that will help get you what you need and help protect against feelings of anger or hurt, which again only put a block to the communication. So take a look at our next slide. Who do we approach? And as you can see, it's like a ladder. And we start at the bottom of the ladder. No, this ladder is not in order of importance. It is a ladder that demonstrates from the ground up, how do we build the structure of this school. And so it is always recommended, whether you have a problem with the teacher themselves or you have a problem with the structure of the school or the classroom, that you start with the teacher. The teacher knows your child. The teacher interacts with your child. A teacher usually values being contacted. It also, to be very frank, if you go above a teacher's head right off the bat, it puts the teacher on the defensive. And that works actually in any hierarchical structure. If you jump a rung on that ladder, then that rung that was jumped wants to know why, and it puts them on the defensive. So it's always recommended that you reach out to the teacher first. If you don't get what you need from the teacher, or the teacher doesn't have an answer for you and acknowledges that, or you feel like you and the teacher are not meeting, right? You're missing each other. So now we look and we say, does our school have a guidance staff? Is there somebody who sort of has an expertise in helping kids in general? Is there someone who works with teachers to help them develop plans to help kids that we talk to? Some schools have school psychologists. Some schools have academic guidance departments. Those are the ones that we want to go to next. So if your teacher doesn't respond in a way that you need, we move up the rung and we go up to our guidance staff. If our guidance staff either doesn't exist or isn't responding, then we have a head of a department. It can be an assistant principal for general studies. It can be a head of the English department, a head of the Mishnah department, a head of the Hebrew language department, depending on what grade we're looking at. But then we move up to the head of the department. And finally, obviously, as you see at the top, is the principal. You have to understand that the higher you get up the ladder, the more people, the more variety of issues these people are dealing with. And so the other advantage of starting with your teacher before you go up the ladder is not just protecting the teacher's feelings, but also increasing the chance that you'll get a response, because a teacher has a set number of kids and they're dealing with educational matters with their children. Once you're talking to the principal, you're dealing with a principal who's got a whole slew of issues and may not be able to get back to you as quickly as you need. So keep this ladder in mind and work your way up the ladder. It works both hierarchically in terms of making sure that you hit the right people, but it also will get you the response that you need. And so we close with our last slide, following up. There are a couple of very important points that I want to end up here. Number one, following up with teachers. When we follow up, when we take the initiative to follow up, two things happen. It shows the teacher, it shows the other person that we take this seriously and that we don't want this to just drop. So we've had a great conversation, we've come up with a plan, you and at school are gonna do A, B, and C, at home we're gonna do E, F, and G, right? And we are going to have this great plan to help our child. Now, Mr. So-and-so, Dr. So-and-so, Mrs. So-and-so, when can we talk again? When can we get together and see how this is going? When you take the initiative to follow up, it shows that you need to not let this ball drop. And so, in following up, you're going to give your own feedback. Here's what I'm seeing at home. Let me share with you what we're seeing with our child at home. And again, always start with the positive. The same way we start with a thank you, I also want you to start with a positive. You know, the truth is that my child is not arguing with me all the time now about homework, right? Or I see my child actually getting most of the work in on time. So always follow up and start by, when you ask how things are going at school, start with your own feedback and always start with the positive. The other thing that is very important to keep in mind, and I deal with this a lot, is I have parents who call me after 3 months in the school and will say, I spoke to Mr. So-and-so 3 months ago and I haven't heard back from them. And the truth is that while that teacher should follow up, my first question to the parents is, well, how come you haven't called for 3 months? Take the initiative. Demonstrate that this is important to you, and it shows the teacher that they have to stay on the ball also. Ask for a measure of change. This is crucial, and this is probably the most crucial point at the end of this, on this slide and at the end of our presentation today. When I, in my practice, working with kids and their families, or in the school system, want to get a sense of whether things are getting better, I divide the concept of change, is it getting better, into two pieces. If you look on the slide, we have frequency and we have intensity. Does he interrupt less frequently? If the issue is that the child disrupts in class, or the issue is that the child doesn't do their homework, so is it getting better in terms of frequency? Is the homework coming in on time more often? Are the interruptions happening less frequently? So there's frequency. There's also intensity, right? When he interrupts in class, can he refocus more quickly? When he hands in his work late, when she doesn't get it in on time, is it coming in as late as it used to? This does two things for us. Number one is it gives us a more specific measure of change. I want to know if things are getting better. You could tell me things are getting better, and now what? I don't have enough information. So when we divide getting better into intensity and frequency, then we have a much more useful, practical, concrete, tangible measure of change. The other thing it does is it allows us to have success more easily. In other words, you can have a success or improvement in the frequency, but not the intensity, and we can still call that better. So it allows us to feel like there is some success here, even if it's not overall. And lastly, when you follow up, after you've given your own feedback, and after you've started with the positive, and you've helped guide the conversation in terms of what does change mean for the good or for the bad, again, keep in mind moving up the ladder. If you still don't have the information you need, and my gut is that if you follow the steps that we've been talking about for the last half hour, and you keep to it, you will be measuring change. And you will see positive change. But if you don't, there is always the opportunity to move up the ladder and to address your issues to another person. My hope is that this is helpful in giving you some steps. These are hopefully aimed at being concrete steps, steps that you are useful, that you can absorb and integrate into your own future interactions, and that as the school year starts, you're able to use this to get your child the assistance and the attention that they need in a way that makes you a partner with the school and stays away from any kind of conflict. Thank you and good luck.